Hey, it's Paul Baines with GreatDad.com, and I'm here with my weekly podcast talking to dads young and old about their adventures in parenting, but also on specific subjects. And today I've got an expert in an area that is directly transferable to our relationships with our partners, with our kids, with our friends, and with probably at work, because that's what our guest does primarily. But I'd like to welcome Jake Stahl.
Thank you, Paul. Really appreciate you having me. It's an honor to be here.
So you like to call yourself a conversational maestro. And I know you use that term as got, maybe you could explain it to us, but you help people in the art of conversation. You are a fractional chief learning officer for corporations. And I assume that is part of it, is how to generate better results through conversational style and making sure that people are motivated and communicating clearly. Would that be correct?
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. I like to say that I reteach people how to communicate.
Because having spent 30 years in corporate America, I know that is a problem for a lot of people.
And it's a shame that it is. It's funny, though, that we're on a dad show, because I think we can learn a lot from the way kids converse. And just remember, that's the foundation of all conversation, is how we learn to converse. But somewhere along the long line, Paul, we just kind of forget. Or we just have other experiences in life where we learn our way out of it and into something new.
Well, let's start there. What are the strengths that kids bring to conversation that you see that adults should try to emulate?
Well, the marvel of kids communicating is it's a natural give and take without really thinking about it. I'm 5. How old are you? Hey, that's my mom. Which mom is yours? I like trucks. What do you like? I like black. Do you like blue? It's a very strong back and forth. And there's not a lot of thought involved. It's a lot of gut. It's a lot of playing off what the other person says. And kids at a young age don't talk and think about what they're going to say next. It's very fluid. It's very in the moment. This is what I got. What do you got? It's like playing cards. Hey, I got 2 9s. What do you have? So the thing we forget as adults, I think, though, is that it's a back and forth. We kind of forget that. And it really degrades conversation and communication overall.
Yeah, I think I'm hearing two different things there. One, I know extroverts often blurt out things without thinking, and introverts kind of like they're pondering a lot. But I think the bigger point there is that quite often in conversations, you're talking to me and I'm already thinking, how am I going to add value? What am I going to say? Or give me my opportunity to tell my story, because you've just taken up a minute. Now I should get my minute to tell you something that's important to me. Is that kind of the problem?
That's exactly right. And a lot of times, Paul, we don't give that minute to the other person.
Yeah.
And it's a lot like kind of having an argument where the other person's angry. Sometimes if you let them vent, and it just kind of diffuses the situation. So we find if we let the other person talk first for a minute, if we make them the subject, it makes it a lot easier to interject later on.
Yeah. But I've been in those kind of conversations. Give me a tip here, because sometimes as a coach, I supposedly I am good at asking provocative questions and keeping it focused on the person who's my client. But in other interpersonal relationships, I find sometimes, you know, half an hour in is like, oh, they've had, you know, I've been so generous that I didn't even get a chance to talk at all. What do you do in those situations where somebody is, you know, takes that opportunity and runs with it? Or is that just the way life is? Sometimes it's unfair and you just go along.
I'm not sure it's unfair. I love the way you characterize it, that it's a very much of a give and take and there's a fairness involved. Let me take a step back. A lot of people will say to me, you teach this all the time. Are you good about it? Are you good at it? And I'm just going to tell you right now, no.
Yeah, I love
me too. Yeah. I'm learning every day.
Every day.
So I don't want to come across as knowing all the answers, but I will say one thing that I work with my clients on is what I call the 2-10 rule. And okay. The 2-10 rule basically says, for every 2 minutes you're in a conversation, break it and have an interaction. So what I might say is, Paul, that's really fascinating what you just said. Build on that a little more. So I get an interaction, so the other person has to talk. At the end of 10 minutes, I kind of summarize. So Paul, what we talked about for the last 10 minutes, let me just make sure we're on the same page. But if you're talking, and this is back to your question, if you're talking for 10 minutes and I haven't gotten a word in, a lot of times, Paul, those 2-minute interjections mean everything. So you're talking to me about your day. So maybe at the end of 2 minutes, I go, Paul, so you've really had a rough day today. So I'm sorry to hear that. Tell me a little bit more, but you actually put a break in their conversation. And it's amazing because it gets them to think a little bit, it gets them to reset, and it also allows you to get in there and ask a question to clarify what they're talking about. You know, when people get on a roll, a lot of times they just lose track of conversation. How many times have we talked and said, "Where was I going with this? What was I just saying?" Right? And so by doing that little bit of an interjection, I give you that reset point and I clarify and I get you involved. Are we going to eliminate the long talkers? No. But are we going to make it more of a back and forth? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's really important, is that interjection point and continuing on, being curious. And I think that what I found is quite often that generosity ends up coming back to you, because
Hundred percent.
it's the human, human process is that give and take. And
Yes.
sometimes if you are fully engaged and you're asking more questions and clearly showing interest, the person, they react in some way, and at some point they say, "Oh yeah, and how are you doing? I've talked a lot about myself, and how did your day go?"
Right, exactly. Yeah, reciprocation to your point is huge and it's built into our genetic code. Do something for me. I do something for you. It may not be equal amounts, but it does involve a give and take. And the great thing is that sets a precedent for conversations to come. Boy, I really want to talk to Paul again because he listens and he asks me questions and he gets involved. So really, it sets a great precedent for future conversations and it makes people want to talk to you. And here's a really cool thing that happens. When they like talking to you and they feel good talking to you, they associate that good feeling with you. So it really builds a trust and just a strong bond between the two of you.
Yeah, I that's such an important point, because I just in our world today, we really lack people who will listen to us. The people closest to you will listen to you for a while, especially if you're going through a trauma. Obviously, they will listen, but everybody around you usually has some sort of agenda, and that's why right now therapy is so popular. I wish coaching should be as popular, I think, because that same kind of talk therapy, that aspect of it is so key, because people need to vent and they need to let it out, but they also need some sort of foil that goes back and asks questions. But I love what you just said, and if we could all just do this every day, how much more attractive we would be as people, as partners, as fathers, because you're so right, is that people want to be heard and they're not being heard. Is that a modern problem, do you think? Is that something that's come about recently, or is that just part of the human condition that's been there a long time?
That's a great question. My personal feeling is that we're just being introduced to it more through social media. And we really hear people vo act out in social media, not always in a bad way, but a good way. And sometimes people just vent or want to tell their story, but it gets to be very one-sided, right? Because I can type as long as I want or say things. I could say anything. I can even make myself anonymous in saying it. But I think social media has done us a great deal of good in allowing us to get exposure to problems. But I also think it's had us break down in communication to some degree because there's no more filters. It's easy to misinterpret what somebody types, even in the best of times, even in the most well-written emails, people can misinterpret it. I always tell my clients, you don't write the email. The person reading it writes it because they write it in their head and it's based on their emotions and what they're going through that day. So it's very important that some communication be written, but a lot of it needs to be verbal, and that verbal needs to be a back and forth.
Yeah. Have you ever had that experience where somebody says, "I don't know why they're so upset. I just wrote them this email." And rather than the way that the person read it, they say, "Hi, Jerry. I know we have a problem with this thing, and I know you've done a horrible job. And it was such a nice email." But of course, the person reading it doesn't get the tone of voice. All they get is
No.
a negative message. Do you have any tips for, I mean, is that something that you do teach, is how to write an effective email, or is your lesson more try to get on the phone, have a direct
A lot
conversation
of it,
rather than email?
that's a good question. A lot of it has to do with learning to balance. What needs to be a text? What needs to be an email? What needs to be verbal? And most of the time, I encourage people that if it's a conversation that goes more than a few sentences, it probably needs to be verbal.
Yep.
Our attention span is shrinking at an incredible rate. I was talking to one marketing person the other day that said, if we don't get our point across in 8 seconds and they're not interested, we lose them. 8 seconds is what? 20, 30 words? Not even, because of how fast we read. So when we write long things or we send out long things, we increase our chances of being misinterpreted. And that gets very difficult. Think of texting. How many things have gone wrong from one text?
Yeah. What do you think of this new trend toward sending video messages as a way to get around that? Does that help or hurt?
Well, that's an excellent question. And I think we should go back to the stat that we know from body language, and that 80% of what we communicate is through body language. It's the eyes, the hands, the tilt of the head. I mean, Paul, there's even a way that psychologists tell you you should have a picture taken to show that you're trustworthy. There's several characteristics of a trustworthy photo. So I think the video is a great trend because you can see, hear sincerity, and I think your chance of being misinterpreted are a lot lower. And you'll notice the videos you can do are short in time span. Nobody sends a 30-minute thank you video. It's,
right.
It's 30 seconds, right?
Yeah.
So I think the brevity is as important as the communication going across.
And then you also talk about cadence over content. Is that related to that?
It goes back to the 2-10 rule. And I think that's part of the communication breakdown that takes place between businesses, partners, parents, and kids, is that we don't ever establish that get back and forth. It's
oh, that's
like,
what you're talking about, cadence. Okay.
Right. So
maybe that was speed or adjusting the.
Yeah, it's actually just establishing a back and forth.
Okay.
Because until you get the cadence, Paul, the content really doesn't matter. Because if I know we're not going to talk to each other, and we're not going to have a good conversation, I'm not going to pay attention to content. A great example is think of the last time the phone rang, you looked at the caller ID and you went, oh, good Lord, I really don't have time for this person. You know that that's a conversation you don't want to have. And it could be because of cadence, content, you just don't like the person. But we're conditioned to talk certain ways and to respond positively to certain things. And I'm a firm believer cadence is just the foundation of how we should communicate.
Yeah. Are there ways that you yourself, because I, you know, everything I know about communication and have had lots of training now in coaching, I'm like you. I'm not an expert and I make mistakes every day, every conversation. Usually not as much in coaching calls because I know it's going to be a one-sided conversation. And all I am there is to be of service and to ask questions and really direct all my attention to the person I'm talking to. But with friends and family, I fall into those traps all the time. Do you have certain ways that, you know, jog your memory, hit yourself or put on a timer, like, stop, do it the right way?
When I first started doing this method, I literally used to have a little timer in front of me, like when I was on the phone. And it just reminded me, if I was speaking, it reminded me to shut up and let them talk. Or if somebody else was talking, it reminded me it was my time to chime in. And again, I don't do it perfectly all the time. There are some people I do it great with. I have a group of friends where if they call, when I pick up, I just say, am I supposed to listen or are you going to want feedback? You know, so you set that tone right there. But no, there'll be the end of a conversation my wife and I'll have, and I'll just think, good Lord, you did nothing of what you talk about. So there's no perfect way. You just try to be conscious of it and you make an effort and that's all you can do. And you try to do better next time.
Yeah, well, that's an important lesson in itself. I mean, in coaching and certainly in the zeitgeist, we talk all the time about intentionality, and I hate that word, but it's so about what you're saying. If you aren't conscious, then you do have those kind of conversations that really aren't two-sided. You just go on and on, and they at the end, you know, it's not even a memory because it wasn't a real give and take.
Yeah, and it gets disconcerting because it's easy to go down a self-critical rabbit hole, right? Oh, I'm just not good at this. People expect this of me, so I might as well just be this way. And that's okay. I'm not criticizing people who, and I'm not saying I'm perfect, but I think a lot of it comes from self-realization. Hey, I made a bunch of mistakes today. I have a joke with my wife. I say, if I don't make six mistakes by breakfast, it's a slow day. But I think a lot of it is being cognizant of it and trying to constantly improve.
So you say you have two words that make a difference in any conversation. What is that secret?
Well, when it comes to conversation, I think you really get down to verbiage, right? And I think there's always words that can make a difference. I don't have two specific words, but I do have specific words I tend to fall back on. One of them is because, especially when you're talking with kids or you're telling them what's best that they should be doing, what's best for them in the moment, the human mind is really geared towards a give and take, and it's geared towards a cause and effect. And cause and effect is almost universally signified by the word because. They did a great social psychology experiment at a copy room in a library in New York City. And what they did was they asked interns to try and cut in line at a photocopier. And when they cut in line, they had to give a reason. So when they first tried to cut in line without giving a reason, compliance was nil, especially with New Yorkers, right? And when they start to say because, they noticed the compliance rate went up. So I need to jump in line because I have to pick up the kids, because I have a taxi waiting, because I have to get back to work. But here's the weird thing, Paul. What they found was even if they said, because I have to make copies, compliance rate was still through the roof. So they found no matter what they said after because, it increased the susceptibility of someone letting you jump in line. So part of working with companies and part of my reasoning with my children nowadays and my wife is I use the word because a lot. So I'd like to see this happen because, or the path you want to take may be this because. And that cause and effect is an amazing motivator for people. And it's a good closer for people who are in sales. Don't just say they should buy the product, say they should buy the product because, and then give that reason.
Wow, I never would have imagined that would be a big magic word.
Yeah. And the other one I believe is the difference between should and could. When we look back at decisions, a lot of us say, I should have done this. And especially when you're raising kids, right? You look back in the days and you go, man, I should have done this. But the reality is, it's not a matter of should, it's could. I had a very good friend of mine. He used to say, you can't, shouldn't have anything. So a lot of it is looking at what you could have done and how you can do it differently now. So not only giving reason in the form of because, but reframing past decisions and allowing yourself to make better decisions now.
Yeah, so that's a more of a personal framing for
Correct.
your own ability to self-motivate or learn from mistakes rather than just saying, I failed again. I failed again.
Right, exactly. Well, and even when you look at kids, you should have done this. Well, you can't really should have done anything. But here's what you could have done, and let's talk about why you could have done that.
That is a great lesson too, in terms of talking to kids. And I wish we could bottle all this up into those types of things that can carry it with us all the time, because you always are watching your kids fail. And you always have that option of saying, oh, you idiot, why did you do that? You screwed up, and they're 7, or my son is 19. He made a mistake just the other day. They got to, hit somebody with a car, a little fender bender. It wouldn't have done any good to our relationship or to him to yell at him about that. But framing it the way you did is just such a different way to teach people, especially young kids, like, hey, stop, you could have done this thing. I really like that framing. I'm going to have that tattooed on my arm and remember that.
It's funny. One of our daughters had a pretty rough past 6 months, and she was really being hard on herself. And I said to her, you got to look back and you have to say, what could you have done? It's easy to go, I should have. I'm Superman. I should have flown around the world and reversed the orbit and gone back in time. But what could you have done? And honestly, if you look at it and you see what you knew at the time and the decisions you make, you did what you could have done. And I truly believe part of living and especially part of parenting is being able to go bed at night, look in the mirror and forgive yourself.
Yeah.
Hey, it was kind of a rough day today. I made some touchy decisions, but you know what? You're okay.
Yeah.
You did what you could. Go to bed. Tomorrow's another day and we'll try again.
All right. Well, this is a lot of really good stuff in here. I think the last point you made maybe ties into what my final three questions always are. And the first one is when the kids were younger, probably when the kids were younger, maybe yesterday, did you have any kind of mantra that you use to keep yourself going or stop yourself from getting frustrated? I've said many times in the show, for me, it was, oh, she's just a little baby. And quite often just saying that to myself out loud or in my head was enough to, you know, tamper my own frustration or potential for getting really irritated at a situation.
I would love to say, Paul, I was smart enough to come up with a mantra that kind of headed my emotions off the past, but I was an emotional dad. But at the end of the day, it was one of those things where I did look in the mirror and try to say, forgive yourself. You made some rough calls today, and some of them weren't necessarily the right ones, but you got to let it go. You got to forgive yourself for what's happened today and just try again tomorrow with your newfound knowledge. So I think the words were more to me at the end of the day than they were in the moment.
Oh, yeah. At the end of the day. Yeah, that's as good as a lot of them I've heard. Also, would you have any major lessons? I mean, your kids, my kids are a little bit older now. We talked a little bit before the show about how our wisdom is a little bit gained over a long period of time versus a shorter period of time. Is there anything that you would tell younger dads or maybe even dads of our age to keep into perspective that you've learned?
I think if I talked to a younger dad or I had to go back in time and talk to my younger self, I would say, this will pass.
Yeah.
You know, it was a rough day. You know, the kids are a little unruly, or you had a rough day at work and you came on, you're stressed out. It'll pass. You may not think so in the moment, but give it a day or so, breathe your way through it and it'll pass. You know, there's things right now that you have memories of with your kids and you think, good Lord, I lost my temper. And you look back at it now and you're like, good Lord, that you could have just let that go. The world would not have fallen off its axis. There wouldn't have been a swarm of locusts over the land. You could have just let that go. And notice I said could have, because that was an option.
You should have let that go.
You should have, right? But I think the reality is we look back as older adults and frame things a lot differently. And I'm a lot different with my granddaughter than I would have been with my own kids.
Yeah, well, grandparents are also always a lot more patient. I think that goes also for longer bits of time, because we have many friends, our own kids have gone through periods of, you know, longer periods, six months, 2 or 3 years, where you wonder, will they get out of it? And not necessarily really super destructive behavior, but when they haven't done well at school, they're trying to overcome challenges in sports or whatever. And I think in the moment, you're worried that this is permanent, and quite often, like you say, this will pass and there will be another phase. And if you are attentive, if you are there, usually that next phase is going to be a positive one, from at least from my experience and what I've witnessed with a lot of other families. The third one is whether you'd have a challenge, and probably relates to what we were talking about in terms of the conversation style, for dads for the coming week, if they could just try to do this one thing or be aware of this one thing for the week, what would you tell them or what would you challenge them with?
I think my challenge would be the next time your child frustrates you or your partner frustrates you, instead of responding immediately, give them a hug, say, I understand, or whatever you want to say in the moment, and then just let it go, reassess it, and come back to it later and see if it's really worth being upset about. I wish I would have done that more often, so I try to do it a lot now. But in the moment, don't get frustrated. Give them a hug. Give yourself time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, stepping back, very good life lesson, because sometimes engaging further or not letting them have the space to vent doesn't help the situation at all.
No, it doesn't. And you actually regret it later. And at the end of the day, when you go to bed, you oftentimes think that really wasn't worth the moment it took to vent. So
yeah,
that would be my challenge to everybody.
Well, Jake Stahl, it's been really a pleasure talking to you. And there's so many nuggets in here. We'll put some of the things in the show notes. I know you work mostly with corporate clients. Do you have a website or some place that people can go to contact you if they want help with developing better communication styles?
Yeah. And to be honest, Paul, I do have a lot of individual clients I work with for an hour a week every month. So I do individual coaching for communication. You can go to jakestahlconsulting.com.
Okay.
Or you can reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm under Jake Stahl on LinkedIn. But yeah, reach out to me either way. I always give 1 hour free consultation so we can see whether actually going to be a fit, because I'm not a fit for everybody and not everybody's a fit for me. But that way we decide whether we want to work together and see if we can help one another.
Great. Well, we'll put that the URL in the show notes so nobody's trying to write that down while driving. And check that out. I mean, I'd happily spend another hour with you, and maybe you can give me some more tips and to be more effective in conversations I'm at work. So that's our show today. For listeners to the podcast, if you'd like to take my course on gratitude, developing gratitude is one of the best ways of trying to create a more happy, more satisfying existence. I have a course at greatdad.com/gratitude. And for listeners, you can get 50% off by entering the code podcast50. All right. Paul Vance, greatdad.com. Jake Stahl, thank you so much for this
thank you, Paul.
Really interesting half-hour conversation. I wish you a happy new year 2024.
Thank you, too.